This is Drew Mackey, and you're listening to Singing Mountain. Every episode of Singing Mountain so far has revolved around music, and this one will too. But this time, the music in question started off more as a sound effect. If the intro music tipped you off about what series I'm going to be talking about, you maybe might be able to guess where I'm going to go with this. Here is the sound effect in question. If you played the English language version of the original NES Legend of Zelda, this was the noise you heard when Link used the recorder, an item that was known elsewhere as a flute, and that makes sense. I mean, when has a recorder been relevant outside of an elementary school classroom? But a recorder is what they called it. Among other things, the recorder could be used to summon a whirlwind that would warp Link to the entrance of any dungeon he'd cleared so far, and help him more quickly navigate the world's map. The original Japanese version of Legend of Zelda sounds ever so slightly different, as it was released for the Famicom Disk System peripheral, which had different audio capabilities but never came out outside of Japan. In fact, the opening track for this episode is Koji Kondo's main title screen composition, just for the Disk System version and not quite what Americans would have heard when they played it back in the day. Just FYI. Just for comparison's sake, here's the way the flute sounded in the Disk System version of the game. Similar, maybe even worse? But then again, I'm probably biased because my American ears are trained to hear the first version and not the second version. Just for the record, I actually think the version we got sounds a little bit better. Thank you. Zelda 2, The Adventure of Link, came out in Japan in 1987, notably less than a year after the first game came out in Japan. And while this game had its own musical instrument item, this time they called it a flute, even though it actually kind of looks more like a little trumpet, this item sounded different. Maybe also a little dumber, some people might say. That's what I say. In case you're wondering, Zelda 2 is not composed by Koji Kondo, but by Akito Nakatsuka, who had previously composed for Ice Climber and Excitebike. The fact that that original first Legend of Zelda flute noise doesn't appear in the sequel doesn't mean that the noise vanished from all video gamedom, however. It actually showed up again pretty soon, just in Super Mario Bros. 3. In this game, Mario can collect three warp whistles that, when he plays them on screen, summon a little whirlwind just like in Legend of Zelda. Also like in Legend of Zelda, they help him navigate the giant world he's in, just in a different way. The whirlwind takes him to this warp zone island, and he gets to pick which world he wants to visit next. You probably know this. I don't know why I'm explaining Super Mario Bros. 3 to anybody. But the interesting thing here is that Koji Kondo opted to reuse the sound effect that had originally appeared in Legend of Zelda, and which I'm pretty sure that he just designed himself. A quick note about this Legend of Zelda Super Mario crossover. There's a sentiment that I encounter every now and then, mostly online, that criticizes Nintendo's Smash Brothers-ization of their various franchises by, for example, having Link and the Splatoon kids show up in the newest Mario Kart game. Instances like this whole warp whistle thing in Mario 3 should show all those critics that Nintendo has kind of always been mixing it up. In fact, maybe one of the most iconic sound effects from Super Mario Bros. 3, the noise you hear when Mario gets the raccoon tail or the tanuki suit, actually comes from another older Nintendo title, Mysterious Castle Murasame, which was also composed by Koji Kondo and which came out for the Famicom in 1986, long before Super Mario Bros. 3 would see the light of day. The giant urchin boss that you find in the fifth dungeon of the game, a dungeon, by the way, that is the one that gives you the recorder item in the first place, is actually a reference to this Nintendo Pac-Man-like game called Clue Clue Land, which had been released 2 years previously. I'll put a link on the SoundCloud page so you can see what I'm talking about, but it's just a very interesting footnote as long as we're talking about Zelda and Nintendo's propensity for mixing it all up and playing very loose with the boundaries of their games. I bring all this up not only to justify what I term the Smash Brothers-ization of the Nintendo universe, where characters from one game pop up more frequently in other franchises, and Samus and Peach maybe get to go shopping and be best friends together, maybe, but also to sing the praises of Nintendo's habit of folding in on itself, nodding to its own history, and embedding stuff from its past inside new products in a way that might take a little archaeology to uncover. That is, this many minutes into the podcast, what I'm actually talking about today. In A Link to the Past, the 1991 Super Famicom Super NES sequel composed by Koji Kondo, the ocarina was introduced. It sounded like this. The game actually termed it flute and not ocarina, but now that the subsequent Zelda game taught everyone what an ocarina is, we can now identify that that was an actual ocarina in A Link to the Past and not just a flute. People who make Zelda games are maybe bad at identifying instruments. Not that I'm judging, I am too, but weird trend. The instrument took a starring role in 1998's Legend of Zelda Ocarina of Time, where the instrument played a whole host of songs, but none of them sounded quite like the original NES noise. However, Koji Kondo, who again composed the game's soundtrack, did manage to hide that original sound effect in one of the compositions. The game's intro track, no less. Did you hear it? The first instance occurs about 15 seconds in, and if you're not listening for it, you might not notice it. But once it's pointed out to you, you'll hear it every time. The nod is as much about Nintendo reflecting on its own history as it is Kondo patting himself on the back. And he should, by the way. He's awesome. He's saying, hey, I made this thing a few years ago. It's still good. I'm reusing it. Maybe you'll notice if you paid attention back in like 1987 when you first played this game, which some people did. I did. In case you couldn't pick it out on your own, here's the part I'm referencing, isolated so you can hear it. A similar nod happened in Legend of Zelda: The Wind Waker, for which Koji Kondo did not serve as the sound director, I should point out. The game's massive soundtrack was the work of three additional composers working with him: Hajime Wakai, Toru Minagishi, and Kenta Nagata, the last of whom is the only one I'm really familiar with, because he did the soundtrack to Mario Kart 64, which I've always thought was great. I'm unclear which of the four should get proper credit for the track I'm about to play. If you know, and if there's some place online that delineates who did what on games with multiple composers, please let me know. Here's the Wind Waker track, which is the Forbidden Woods theme. Did you hear it? This one may be more subtle, but I swear it's there, about 1 minute and 48 seconds in. It's not played on a flute or ocarina here, but it's maybe a bassoon or oboe? I'm actually not sure. Now I really regret criticizing the Zelda people for not being able to identify instruments, but it sounds like the same melody to me. Again, here's the part of the track I'm referring to. In Legend of Zelda: The Minish Cap, which was released initially for the Game Boy Advance in 2004, Link once again got an ocarina item, and for the first time it sounded almost exactly as its counterpart in the original Legend of Zelda did. However, that's not the only reference to the melody in The Minish Cap. It also appears in the soundtrack to the Wind Ruins area. Here's that track, which was composed by Mitsuhiko Takano. Did you hear it? If not, here's the part I'm referring to. This has happened at least one more time. I say at least because I'm basing this on what I've noticed with my own ears. I tried looking around online to see if anyone else has documented this reuse of the flute motif in later games, but I didn't find anything. It's kind of not the easiest thing to Google also. But I have been playing the new Zelda game, Breath of the Wild, and despite the fact that the game doesn't have all that much music in the traditional sense, it does feature a shout out to the flute melody. Before you get mad, know that I completely understand that Breath of the Wild is actually richly scored and a lot of work went into making it sound. The music is just sparse, and that's totally in line with the game's big open vibe. It's just that if you're a series veteran, you have to look a little harder to find those catchy, memorable Zelda tracks. Fortunately, one of the BGMs you hear a lot is pretty good, and it happens to be the one that features the flute melody. I think it does. I speak of the shrine music, which you hear in each of the 100-plus puzzle dungeons scattered throughout the game. We'll be right back. one last time. Did you hear it? The part I think is reflecting that original flute melody can be heard about 3 minutes and 5 seconds in. Here's the section I'm referring to. For this composition, I have to commend Breath of the Wild's composers, Manaka Kataoka and Yasuaki Iwata. The track is beautiful, which is good because you hear it a lot and often during situations that stress your patience, puzzle dungeons and all that. As the music plays on, it fluctuates between serene and tense, and there are maybe sometimes that it's both simultaneously, which seems impossible, but this track might be evidence that you can do it. It also feels like a stark contrast to the overworld music, and it should be exactly that. The fact that they worked the flute melody into this track makes me dislike it all the more. Again, if you know of other moments in Zelda games where the original NES flute melody cameos, let me know. I'm happy to append this podcast with any more that might be out there. You can listen to previous episodes of Singing Mountain at soundcloud.com/singingmountain. If you want to listen to a specific track that I featured in this episode, every episode page has links to where I got the music from. While you're there, check out my other podcast, We Are Not Young Anymore. It's about revisiting the movies we loved when we were kids, and you can find it at soundcloud.com/wearenotyounganymore. You can find me elsewhere on Twitter at Drew G. Mackey, M-A-C-K-I-E, and on my blog, backoftheserialbox.com. I'm closing this episode with a song that doesn't exactly come from a video game, but I think you'll like it anyway. Earlier this year, musician Will Patterson made the rounds on gaming blogs for his kick-ass musical project, Switched On SNES, which has him remaking video game music using analog synthesizers. The first batch of tracks all came from Legend of Zelda: A Link to the Past. This is so my sweet spot, pop culturally speaking, and I reached out to him asking if I could use one of his tracks on Singing Mountain. He said yes, which was very nice of him. And for this, you should be happy, because if you've not already heard this, you are in for a treat. I strongly encourage you to check out Patterson's page for the project, switchedonsnes.bandcamp.com, and then give him all of your money, because he's planning on doing future albums featuring the likes of Secret of Mana, Earthbound, Donkey Kong Country, and more. So he basically got in my own head and made everything sound like Tangerine Dream, and I can't think of a better thing than that. Please give him your money. Without further ado, please enjoy the Switched On SNES reworking of the Dark World theme from A Link to the Past. See ya.